Welcome back to Space Castle. It's your clubhouse and hours for all things nerdy. My name's DT, and we're doing a side quest on Stranger Things Season 4. The second half of which, I guess if you want to call it a second half, just dropped this 4th of July weekend. The entire world is going absolutely fucking apeshit over it. If you haven't watched the show, I don't know what you're doing with your life. It's time to get out from under that rock and give it a try. I just finished the second half of Season 4 on the day it dropped. I actually left work early, went straight home, dove into it, watched the first hour and a half episode, watched the second 2.5 hour episode, which oddly enough kind of just flies right by. That second finale episode just did not feel like 2.5 hours long. And I have to say that for the entire season, I was thoroughly impressed and very, very happy with it. And it feels like a strong return to form for Stranger Things in general. Now, I loved the first season that came out in 2016. I was born in 1983, so it just hit every single checkmark for me. It had that combination of sci-fi and horror, and also kind of that sort of Goonies, like getting the team of kids together to beat evil and whatnot, and it rang all those bells. It checked all those checkmarks for me. I even loved all the needle drops. A lot of people think that the show in general just relies too heavily on 80s nostalgia and things like that, and I understand where they're coming from. I disagree just because I'm so enamored with it, because like that's my jam. Like, I was born in the 80s and raised in the 80s. I love the premise. I love the execution of it. I thought all the kids are great in the first season. I was over the moon with it. I thought it was fantastic. Season 2 was something of a diminished return. I still really dug the demo dogs. Sean Astin is a national fucking treasure. It was awesome to have him in the show. And just to kind of expand and kind of explore more of the lore of the show and more of the things that are happening, we get to learn quite a bit more about the Mind Flayer as he was, you know, sort of possessing Will Byers and using him as sort of like a human spy in the human world. It was a dope season. It was cool. Season 3, I was honestly not a fan of. I thought it dragged. I thought it was a little bit all over the place. I did not care for the episode where they're just in a golf cart driving down a fucking tunnel under the mall. I thought it was really far-fetched and cartoonish what was going on with the Russians having a secret base under the shopping mall. Nothing really came together for me in that season, and I honestly have never even been compelled to rewatch it, even as I was preparing for Season 4 to come out. Just not a fan. It was starting to feel to me like the show was starting to get a bit long in the tooth. Like, the writers were starting to run out of ideas, and they didn't really know what was going on. And I still feel that way with Season 3. It feels like just sort of a treading water season. The stuff with Billy and Max were obviously the highlight. Billy sacrificing himself to save everybody. The design for the monster that terrorizes them all, the big, like, human flesh homunculus thing, was pretty dope. But in general, the season just didn't work for me. So I was excited but apprehensive for Season 4, and I gotta say, I'm so fucking happy that it seems like they've turned things around and they've reestablished their grasp on the story they're trying to tell, and Season 4 is just an absolute delight. We got a couple newcomers, as is normally the case with all these seasons. Joseph Quinn, who you might know from a very small walk-on role on Game of Thrones, is probably the most notable newcomer for Season 4. He plays Eddie Munson, who is the leader and sort of, I don't know, de facto president of the Hawkins High School D&D club, the Hellfire Club. Right out the gate, audiences just fall in love with this character, and for a good reason. Joseph Quinn plays a character with such an awesome, manic, 80s metalhead nerd energy that you can't help but just immediately fall in love with the character and want to root for him to succeed. Even though when you're first introduced to him, you really don't understand his sort of motivations, and you really don't know what kind of character this is going to turn out to be. There were some shots in the early trailers of him shredding with his guitar on the Upside Down, which actually led a lot of people to believe that he might have been some sort of a stealth villain of some kind. That ends up not being the case, thankfully, because we're allowed to fall in love with this character, allowed to root for him, and he's always on our side, which is great. Which is actually really clever is the fact that as the town of Hawkins doesn't really accept Eddie, and they look at him sideways, they don't trust him because they know he's a drug dealer and has long hair, wears an Iron Maiden sort of fucking denim vest, and he plays D&D. He's just a sort of outcast in town. And we view him the same way. Like, we don't really see him as being like this heroic character or somebody we initially really like, but we immediately grow to like him more and more, and he becomes a fan favorite, obviously. He was one of my favorite characters ever in the series up to this point, and I think Joseph Quinn just absolutely nailed it and kicked ass as the character. It was really great. So the season kicks off right where Season 3 ends. There was that big situation with the mall and the secret Russian base underneath the mall and gates opening up, and Eleven has to seal the gates. And we think that Hopper has either been like teleported or he's died or something's going on. And we get this very small hint that he is in Russia for some reason. This is the one thing, one of the few things in this season that really didn't work for me, is we learned that Hopper is actually incarcerated. He's in basically a gulag in Russia. He's being held captive. And he is there because he just simply fell down. Like, our last shot of him in season 3 was him, like, you know, waving Joyce away. Like, he's going to make this heroic sacrifice. We don't know if he's going to get sucked into the upside down. We don't know if he's going to be killed and blown up. We don't know if he's going to be teleported somewhere else. We don't know what's going to happen. And it turns out he just fell over some railing, and the Russians picked him up and they shipped him off to Russia, like right across the Bering Strait. And that's honestly, Hopper's entire storyline in this season could have been something really great and could have been something special. And it does start to work initially. However, the weakest sort of B plot, if you want to call it a B plot, they all sort of feel like A plots in this season, is the fact that Joyce Byers and Murray, who you might remember from previous seasons, they hatch a scheme and a plan and go on an adventure to go to Russia to rescue Hopper. And it doesn't work. Like, at all. Like, I know people love Murray. I'm not a huge fan of the character. I think the actor is phenomenal. I think he's doing a great job with the character as it's being written and given to him. I unfortunately have felt that Winona Ryder was sort of a weak link in the series since season 1. Honestly, I thought she was pretty good playing as a sort of manic, confused, and stressed out and just burnt out mom. Subsequent seasons, she's just kind of been a weak link, both in terms of performance and also just not having anything to really do. And that's what the side plot with Hopper trying to escape from the gulag in Russia feels like, because Winona Ryder as Joyce Byers and, of course, Brent Gelman as Murray Bauman, they end up going through this wacky, zany fucking adventure to go to Russia to try and save Hopper. And it just comes off as very cartoonish and very silly and very off tone from the whole rest of the season and what's going on with the kids and them trying to defeat the new villain of this season. It just doesn't work for me at all. It feels like they needed something for the adults to do in this show, and they just kind of half-assed this zany plot, because honestly, I feel the Hopper side plot would have been so much better if it was just Hopper being a fucking badass. David Harbour fucking rules. He's an amazing actor. He's fantastic. He's got that physicality about him. He's got that gruffness that everybody loves. It would have been great just to have him have his own side plot and his own machinations in trying to escape this gulag. And of course, he gets to team up with a new character named Dmitri, who is a Russian, a soldier, who tries to aid Hopper and ends up being incarcerated himself for being a traitor, played by Tom Wallachia, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, who you might actually recognize as Jacques Nagar, the faceless man from Game of Thrones. Couple of Game of Thrones connections here between, you know, the guy who's playing Eddie and also the guy who plays Dmitri. The entire Hopper subplot would have been so much better if it was just Hopper and Dmitri working their way out and trying to find a way to escape the gulag. It reaches a culmination with Joyce and Murray getting involved that just keeps getting more and more cartoonish and silly. And I just didn't vibe on it because it brings the series down to such a lull from all the highs of what's happening with the kids. And let's go ahead and get into that because, I mean, obviously that's the meat and potatoes of the story. That's why people are watching the show, is they want to see what's going on with the Upside Down. They want to see what's going on with the kids and you know, their battle against the Mind Flayer and the forces of the Upside Down. We have a new villain this time. And they're calling him Vecna because they keep referring to all the villains in this show as D&D monsters, which is, you know, badass. I love it. The character is called Vecna, and he's played by Jamie Campbell Bauer, and he has an intricate backstory which ties into Eleven's past with Dr. Brenner and the Hawkins facility, and it's actually really fucking cool, and I think Vecna is probably my favorite villain up to this point, mostly because he's got a personality. And he's actually got motivation, and he has reasons for hating Eleven and hating the world in general and wanting to bring it down to destroy it. I think that Jamie Campbell Bauer plays the different facets and different faces of Vecna and, you know, Henry Creel very, very well. And you feel a sort of sympathy for Vecna. For the first time, they've actually created a villain that's actually somewhat sympathetic. And he's an evil motherfucker, don't get me wrong. Like, he is straight up just murderous, awful, horrible, just terrible villain. But his backstory is such that you understand that he could have been Vecna, or he could have been Eleven. He could have been that good guy, that superhero sort of character that Eleven is, if he hadn't suffered the circumstances he did. But he's got some mental problems, he's got some issues. He turns into a violent character, which allows Dr. Brenner to sort of exploit that. And when Brenner can't control him, things go really, really fucking bad. He has a showdown with Eleven. We learned that Eleven wasn't actually the person who massacred everybody in the Hawkins facility. It was Henry Creel / Vecna / One. We learned that Henry Creel / Vecna, who is the villain of the story, was actually the first of Dr. Brenner's sort of experimentations. And that's where shit goes horribly wrong, because we learn that Vecna is killing multiple people across Hawkins. For each murder he commits, he's sort of breaking down the barrier between the Upside Down and the real world, because where he kills those people turns into a crack, a sort of gate. The main cast of the story, they're discovering these gates. They're learning about Vecna's sort of motivations, what he's trying to do, and of course they hatch a plan to stop it. The kids, I think, are just fucking on fire here. Millie Bobby Brown is 11. She's just always knocking it out of the park. She's got that sort of stoic, but still unsure of herself, massively powerful, but still scared of her own powerful character archetype just down pat. She's a great actress. She's fantastic. Gaten Matarazzo is Dustin Henderson. He's fantastic. He's got a lot of really beautiful, really sweet moments with Eddie Munson, the guy he sort of looks up to. And there's a little bit of a thing there I noticed where he's sort of gotten away from sort of following Steve Harrington around. He's sort of following Munson around now because, you know, Menton's the metalhead who plays D&D and whatnot, and they really connect. Really cool friendship. They have a lot of really great moments together. It's fantastic. I actually think that Caleb McLaughlin, the kid who plays Lucas Sinclair, is probably the standout of this season, especially in the finale. He's got some moments where he's actually able to just full-on act. And I was shocked because Lucas has always been something of like a tertiary side character. I mean, he's in the thick of things with, you know, the main characters or whatnot. He's got his relationship with Maxine, but he doesn't really get a chance to shine very often. And here, he's got his own sort of turmoil where he's dealing with who he wants to be as a young man and the crowd he wants to run with, his loyalty to his friends, but also wanting to progress and grow up and become popular and become a basketball player and like do all the things that normal teenagers are supposed to do. And there's a scene at the end where everything just comes to a head for him and he's got to make choices very quickly. He has to do it while he's watching his friend die. And it's just masterful acting from just a phenomenal young actor. I think of all the stars in the show, I think Caleb McLaughlin just showed that he might have the sort of star power to go the furthest in his career if he really wanted to. The kid was just absolutely on fire this entire season. Natalia Dyer is Nancy Wheeler. She's fantastic as always. She gets some straight up fucking Ellen Ripley badass moments here, which is really cool. Taking charge and becoming a leader in her own right. And she has some really cool moments to show that off. Joe Keery is Steve Harrington, another fan favorite. Everybody loves Steve the Hare Harrington. And he's less relegated to being like the babysitter, even though he feels like he's still being the babysitter. He becomes even more of a hero in his own right. Like, he's really turned things around. He's become a better person. He's dependable. He's honest with himself more now and with other characters. Steve the Hare Harrington, he's got some really great moments in this, and he turns into a fucking badass in his own right, too. Like, he's out there just fucking kicking ass. Like, my favorite Steve moments were in season two, where he's hanging out with Dustin, and, you know, they're taking out the demo dogs, and he's growing from feeling like a babysitter to recognizing that these kids are important and they're special. And they're good people, despite that they're younger, despite that he feels saddled with them. He's got a responsibility to them, and he's realizing these kids are fantastic and they're his equals. And that continues to grow every season. And here, it just comes to a culmination where everybody is older now. There's no little kids running around. They're all freshmen, sophomore, you know, juniors and seniors in high school. They're all in the same sort of level. It feels more like a sense of camaraderie and more like a sense of community and just fully bringing the team together for the first time, which is really fucking dope. Joe Keery is fantastic as Steve. He just knocks it out of the park. Steve has got some really sort of character growth moments here, turning things around and discovering himself. And Keery just plays it brilliantly. It's fucking awesome. The one thing I absolutely loved about season three was Maya Hawke as Robin. Of course, we meet her as, you know, she's working the ice cream store with Steve. She's this cool, quirky, silly character. And she grows into her own in this as well. She's always been self-conscious about her running her mouth off. I can fully relate to that. Being sort of gawky and not fully in control of her body and sort of being clumsy and just also, you know, having to deal with the fact that she knows she's a lesbian and it's the 80s, which was a tough time to sort of be in the closet. And she has feelings for a fellow student that she can never reveal because if she says the wrong thing or if she gets rejected, all of a sudden she's being outed. Everybody will know she's a lesbian and it'll be a really uncomfortable situation for her, unfortunately. Maya Hawke is so fucking good. I mean, obviously, her parents are two fantastic actors. You got Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman, two people whose work I greatly respect. And I think she's got a bit of an advantage because she's got two great actors as parents she can relate to and use as resources. But man, she's really coming into her own as an actress as well. She kind of blew up onto the scene in the previous season of this show, and she fully takes charge here. She's a great fucking actor. Robin is an excellent character who is legitimized here more than ever, and I'm just super glad she's part of the cast. And of course, a lot of the heavy lifting in this season is done by Sadie Sink, playing Max Mayfield. As you know, she lost her brother Billy very tragically in season 3, and she's carrying the burden of that with her. As such, she becomes a target of Vecna, who wants to use her as a victim so he can open up one of his multiple gates to and from the Upside Down. Sadie Sink is a wonderful actress. She just knocks it out of the park. She has an episode called Dear Billy in the season, which if you come out of that episode with dry eyes, there's something wrong with you. Like, you need to talk to somebody or drink a little bit more, loosen up those emotions, because her performance in that episode is just mind-boggling. And it's amazing that the Duffers and Netflix in general have been able to find these fantastic child actors from all over the place, because the culmination of this cast is just absolutely stellar. They're always a high point. Even if the plot is somewhat meandering and you're not really feeling it, the performances and just the feeling of camaraderie and friendship that all these kids bring together, especially since they've been together for so long, it's just wonderful to watch. It's great. It's not an unfair comparison to say this is sort of like the modern day Goonies, where these personalities from these young people are just a joy to watch. And you can tell they're just having a blast doing it, despite the fact that they're all covered in mud and blood and running for their lives. I mean, the actors, of course, not the kids themselves in the show, because that would fucking suck. And, of course, you got your villains. You got Matthew Modine, who's a legend at this point, playing Martin Brenner, and, you know, the legendary Paul Reiser, Sam Owens. We learn more and more about Dr. Brenner, the kind of person he is. We kind of almost learn to feel sympathy for Dr. Brenner, because as we grow to understand who he is and why he does the things he does, he's really just sort of a hollow person. Like, there's a line in the show that talks about the fact that he is a mediocre man who is seeking greatness through others. I think that really drives it home for Dr. Brenner, because we learn that he's a brilliant scientist, but he's not that fucking great. So what he's trying to do is achieve greatness by using all these kids with special powers to achieve his goals, and to fully exploit them and use them so that he can become, you know, whatever it is he's trying to become. Paul Reiser, Sam Owens is one of the quiet high points of the season for me. I think Paul Reiser's fucking fantastic. I think he brings an honesty and a sense of heart to Sam Owens. He knows that Brenner's a fucking psychopath. He knows he's a piece of shit. And he genuinely wants to help Eleven get her powers back so she can help save the world. Whereas we know Dr. Brenner wants her to get her powers back so he can continue to manipulate and exploit her. So the dynamic between Brenner and Owens in the season is fantastic. And there's some absolute game of chess going on between these two brilliant legendary actors. And it's really fucking fun to watch. There's a few more things I want to talk about in regards to Stranger Things Season 4. But we got some messages from Earth we got to get to. We're going to play those and then come right back.
Hi, I'm Leah.
And I'm Beth Ann.
And we're She Will Rock You.
She Will Rock You is a bi-weekly podcast about rock history.
Each episode, we talk about an artist and their lives, but we do it a little differently.
You see, we noticed there was a lack of ladies hosting music podcasts,
so we wanted to fix it.
And here we are, two badass millennial ladies talking about rock music our parents wouldn't let us listen to.
As a bonus, you'll even get our beer recommendations at the end.
Find us wherever you listen to podcasts.
And remember, don't do drugs!
There's a whole bunch of stuff going on in this season. Honestly, I'm not going to try and recap all of it more than I have already, because first of all, you should just watch it. And if you've already watched it, you need to rewatch it, because there's so many great fucking moments in this show. Like I said before, I am so glad that there's been like this fantastic return to form, because this is a show I really, really loved at first and really, really wanted to love in seasons 2 and 3. And it's come full circle and I'm fully fucking in love with it again. I thought they just absolutely nailed it with this season. And I'm super happy with it. The adults don't really seem to have much to do. I'm not sure what's going to happen in season 5 with the adults, because we've gotten to the point where this is the kids' fight. Like, the adults, they no longer really have anything to fight for directly because, you know, Hopper's safe now. Everything's been kind of taken care of on that end. I guess they're just going to be running support. I mean, Hopper's a fucking badass. He'll be on the front lines, you know, helping Eleven try and fight the Upside Down. But I don't really know what Joyce and Murray are going to have to do in season 5, but I guess we'll find out. Hopefully the writers have recognized that there wasn't a whole lot for them to do in this season, and they sort of write that wrong. And they're a little bit more integral to the plot instead of sort of a silly, zany sort of breather from all the heavy shit the kids are going through. I will say this, though. If they come back with season 5, because shit really fucking hits the fan in this season. A lot of characters are taken out. A lot of characters are incapacitated. It's very much sort of an Empire Strikes Back feel in the end, where it's bittersweet, where the victory here is just the fact that so many of the characters survived and not necessarily defeating, you know, the ultimate evil. Vecna, of course, gets defeated by Eleven, who, you know, gets her powers back through Dr. Brenner's experimentations out in Vegas. But the Mind Flayer is still out there. And Vecna's plan of opening up gates to form cracks so he can invade the human world, you know, the right side up, I guess if you want to call it, succeeds through means that I don't necessarily want to explain here, just because I don't want to go too spoilery for anybody who hasn't had a chance to watch it over this holiday break. But shit gets bad, and this season ends on a down note. And the show has this really weird habit of, no matter what the characters have gone through in the season, they always sort of return to a status quo in the beginning of the following season. Like, everything is kind of okay and right and, like, shit like that. Like, everybody's going to school. And even if things aren't as good beneath the surface as they appear to be, there's still this weird habit of going back to the status quo every time we revisit his characters. And I understand that you have to start the story over and you have to have your inciting factors and you have to have that sort of culmination into whatever the plot might be. But if we hit season 5 and, like, all the kids are back in school and they're, like, talking about boyfriends and dealing with relationship shit, when there's, like, a literal fucking gateway to hell in the middle of their town, it's gonna be weird. I think we've hit the point where season 5 just needs to be all-out war between Eleven and her friends and the Upside Down and trying to solve and defeat and end all this once and for all. Defeat the Mind Flayer and, you know, just wrap up the season. Because as far as I know and as far as we've been told, season 5 will be the last one. So I think it's time to take off the kid gloves, no pun intended, and just have the season be all out war. Like, we don't need any inciting factors. We've got everything we need. We know what's going on at this point. There's a literal fucking gateway to hell in the middle of Hawkins. Half the town has been destroyed. Characters have died. Characters are incapacitated. There is really no space for them to try and establish any sort of status quo before going into the proper plot of season 5. Like, it just needs to be it. We're ready for it. We've been waiting for 4 seasons for shit to just go absolutely fucking bonkers. Let's fucking do it. I'm excited. But yeah, I really love this season. A lot of really cool surprises. A lot of neat just sort of happenings. A lot of neat cameos. Robert Englund, who is just, he's a goddamn fucking legend. He's Freddy fucking Krueger. He shows up as Victor Creel in a pivotal role that sort of fills in some of the lore and the backstory for 1/Henry/Vecna. The things that have been going on with the town as well. We kind of delve right into why Hawkins is viewed as being cursed. And just a lot of really cool lore. A lot of stuff is filled in here. Because the show has been really sort of ambiguous about that stuff up until now. And it's been fun, but we're also at the point where we as the audience deserve to know more about what's going on. And why the town is viewed as being cursed. And why so many terrible things happen here. And it all makes sense very, very beautifully. Everybody on social media is talking about the fact that it feels like this is a culmination of the 4 seasons of the show together, and people have retroactively gone back and watched previous seasons to pick out and see if they can find hints for the stuff that happened in this season. I don't know if I agree with all of them, but it's fun to see everybody sort of going on this Easter egg hunt. I don't want to say that they've been making the show up as they go, but I know there's sort of an outline, like a basic backbone to the story here, but I do think they've kind of just been making shit up as they go along. And I think they've written themselves into a spot very cleverly where they're able to retroactively make that stuff make sense. You know, like clock chimes and stuff like that in previous episodes have now tied into Vecna, which makes sense. It's retroactively clever, and it's neat to see all the people kind of go back and piece things together. Maybe more so than, I don't know, maybe the writers did when they were actually putting the seasons together. I don't know. But season 4 of Stranger Things, just tear through it. It's fantastic. Binge watch it. I really, really love it. I'm so glad that the show feels like it's returning to form. And I'm honestly very, very excited for season 5 now. But I hope, like I said, they do what I'm hoping they do, and it just fucking explodes, and it's just full-on fucking war between, you know, the regular world and Upside Down. And no more return to status quo. No more silly relationship stuff. All that's been solved. All the characters understand each other. I haven't really honestly talked about Charlie Heaton as Jonathan Byers because he really has nothing to do here, and the love triangle, so to speak, between him and Nancy and Steve is old hat at this point. And it's a shame because Charlie Heaton's a really good actor, but Jonathan Byers just feels like a sort of throwaway character. Like, this is a kid who's been involved with saving the world three times now when he's still sort of a layabout and sort of lazy do-nothing character. And he's eventually, no doubt, going to lose Nancy because he's just fucking lazy. Like, he's just not a compelling character, and he has no motivation despite the fact that he's had to deal with world-threatening circumstances. Whereas Steve has turned things around, and he's become a man in his own right, and he's taken charge, and he's become a leader of these characters. And when the time comes for him to take action and do the right thing, he always seems to do it. Whereas Jonathan just kind of falls by the wayside and kind of mopes around a bit. And it's tiresome. If any of the characters need to get got in season 5, I think it's probably... Yeah, I think it's Jonathan Byers. I think John needs to die. Just to clear that fucking path so my boy Steve can get back with his girl and they can, you know, live happily. I think everybody would be sad about Jonathan Byers dying for about 15 minutes, and I think we'd get over it. Wouldn't be as heartbreaking as some of the other, you know, deaths we witnessed. You know, rest in peace, Bob. My boy Sean Astin, you should have been in all the seasons. You should have been the one to take down the fucking Mind Flayer and be the hero of the show, but that's all right. I think that's going to do it for this Space Castle side quest. Thank you for listening to me ramble about Stranger Things Season 4. I'm very excited about it, and I really wanted to get something out there. I want to hear from you guys. Let me know what you thought of this season, how you think it stacks up against the other three seasons, and what you think is going to be in store for us in Season 5. You can do so by sending us an email at spacecastlepodcast@gmail.com. You can reach us on Twitter and Instagram at spacecastlepod, or you can give me a buzz and send us a text at 1-970-591-3577. If we do a follow-up or like a group discussion about Stranger Things, I might actually read or play your comments. And if you're liking these little side quest things, it's just something we're doing just to give you guys more content and talk about things in a more timely fashion. If you're listening to us on Good Pods or Apple or Spotify, leave us a review too. And if you want to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/spacecastlepod. We've got all kinds of stickers and t-shirts, and you get early access to content there as well. It's pretty cool. And we'll see you next time on Space Castle, your clubhouse and ours for all things nerdy. My name is DT. Bye, love you.